Classical 107.3,
St. Louis's voice for the arts.
Broadcasting in HD at 96.3 KNOU, HD2, St. Louis.
And right before the break, we wrapped up the 8 o'clock hour this morning with Beethoven's First Symphony, the Berlin Philharmonic, under the direction of Herbert von Karajan. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after 9 o'clock. Awfully pretty day. A little on the chilly side still. We're at 25 degrees outside our Clayton studios here at the Radio Arts Foundation. And it is time for Friday Morning with the Arts. I'm Jim Doyle. We have the great good fortune this morning to welcome the traveling ensemble, shall we say that? Alexis J. Roston and Abdul Hamid Royal. Is it Royal or Royal? Okay, it's Royal. All right, and they are appearing in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill starting next week, opening on the 17th, running through March 4th at the Kranzberg Arts Center, a Max and Louis production. Welcome, both of you.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Thanks.
Welcome to the Radio Arts Foundation. We put you in our group of newbies. We have regulars in and out, but we love to have new folks in.
Glad to be here.
Good.
So, the show, Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, is obviously about the great Billie Holiday.
Yes.
The first thing I have to ask you, Alexis, is have you always loved Billie Holiday? Were you familiar with Billie Holiday when you took this task on, or was it a new study for you?
It was all of those things. It was a new study because I was it's so far removed from listening to her music, but I did grow up listening to Billie Holiday in my home. My father was just into music, period. But he played a lot of jazz and a lot of blues in my home. So I grew up listening to her. But, you know, I was a kid, and I went into kid-type music,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so fast forward to the show reaching Chicago at Porchlight Music Theater, a friend of mine said, "Hey, I need you to audition for this show. I think you'd be great for it." And I'm like, okay. I go in, I sing a couple tunes of hers, and honestly, I had no idea that they would actually cast me. I was like, I don't sound anything like this lady. But yeah, this is my third time doing this show, so apparently I have captured her in some form or fashion,
which is quite a claim. I mean, how difficult is it to capture Billie Holiday?
Quite.
We're not talking about a regular, it's not like doing, you know, a pop singer.
Exactly.
We're talking about the Lady Day here.
Exactly. So it was a very daunting task. When I got the phone call, I was like, are you kidding me? But okay. So about 3 weeks out of the first rehearsal, I decided, okay, well, it's time to just sit in with this music. And I shed what musicians call just over practicing. I shed for that 3 week period, just closing myself in with her music and trying to capture all her nuances. And yeah, I pulled it off, I think.
Yeah. I'm sure you did. And our piano player, full disclosure here, we had planned on the two of you performing this morning, but we had some of those infamous production problems. So we're not going to do that, but that's just fine. Abdul Hamid, how did you get involved in this project?
A friend of mine gave me a call at the Milwaukee Rep and asked if I would be interested in doing a show at the close of their season. And while I was doing that, they asked me if I'd be interested in doing Lady Day. And
you were familiar with the show itself previously?
Of course. Yeah, my friend Shelton Becton is the original musical director.
Yeah.
For it, and Clayton Craddock, those folks are friends of mine, and so I'm quite familiar with the piece, but I had never done it. And so they asked me if I'd come to the Milwaukee Rep to do it, with some young lady from Chicago who had just won a Jefferson Award in the previous year for doing it. And I said, yeah.
Lady Day is blushing a little right now.
So I said, sure, let's do it. And that's how I got involved.
So you didn't know each other prior to the pairing?
Never met.
No.
So when did we start singing?
My mom said when the doctor spanked my behind and said it was a girl, I had already sung my first tune. That's what she said.
Well, you come from a good pedigree then, right?
For sure. Like I said, my dad in the Air Force, he played the trumpet. Have I ever heard him play it? No. But my mom tells me about it all the time. And so he was just into music. And so every weekend, for sure, he would just put records on the record player and it'd just be nonstop music, you know, Saturday and Sunday. You know, I went to school Monday through Friday, but Saturday and Sunday, I listened to nothing but jazz and blues and gospel.
What your dad wanted you to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. It paid off in the end. It really did.
It did indeed.
And Abdul Hamid, where does your music background start? I mean, were we in this high school band, or was it?
We started when we were 4 years old.
Okay.
At the Milwaukee Conservatory of Music with my first piano teacher, Toba Kramer.
Okay.
And both of my parents were musical. My entire family is musical. My mother worked in the opera company, and my father was a jazzophile. So I grew up in and around music every single day. We sang at the dinner table. It was almost a requirement to offer some kind of music whenever we were together.
Boy, I'm wondering how I can get an invitation to that dinner table.
Yeah.
I would love that.
And from the time that they recognized that I had talent, they also recognized that I needed to have training. So
made the investment.
They absolutely did. And from that moment until I finished grad school at Northwestern with a grad degree in conducting, that's all I've been doing.
It always interests me when people are in and out of the Radio Arts Foundation. We hear so many different stories, fascinating stories about how musicians, actors, dancers get their start. And we so often hear about the passion coming from the performer at an early age, but the parents saying, you're going to have a hard time making a living at that. You know, you should probably be a doctor or a lawyer. And in both your cases, it sounds like you were nurtured from a very early age.
Yeah. Never,
good for your parents.
Never, ever had an issue. My mom, as soon as she recognized that this is something that was in me, she fostered it. So I've done everything that you would consider musical theater and beyond, you know, as far as she even put me in modeling school, you know, just to get the poise, the etiquette, the charm. She made sure I was traveled, you know, so we were always traveling. She wanted to make sure I was exposed, you know, and then of course there was always the piano playing, all the dance classes, jazz, tap, modern, ballet, gymnastics, just whatever it was that she thought would help foster me being a part of what I would, you know, eventually create as my profession.
Right.
You know? Well, so I also went to college for it. Mm. I have a BFA in musical theater from Howard University.
Howard? Yeah, right on.
H-U.
All right. I gave a shout out for Northwestern. I guess that's fair.
That's right.
My folks.
This is like sibling rivalry here.
Always, yeah. Since day one.
Yeah. I mean, my folks definitely encouraged the art. What I will say is that my folks also were people of a certain era. And while they encouraged the arts, my father, who probably should have been one of the premier jazz pianists in America, because of the time that he grew up in and because of where he grew up, my parents were very much about practicality as well. So, I mean, they were encouraging around the arts, but they were also wary of the career aspects of it. My father wanted me to go into international relations or international law. He did not see the music field as stable or, you know, something that he thought that I could count on. And so there was some tension around, you know, choosing to do this as a career. What I will say, though, is that as I invested more and more time in it and the career sort of began to present itself, they were very, very supportive.
I love to hear that. And now you are in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. It opens up on the 17th. That would be next week. It runs through March 4th at the Kranzberg Arts Center. It's a Max and Louie production. Our guests this morning, Alexis J. Roston and Abdul Hamid Royal. It's Friday Morning with the Arts. We'll talk more in just a minute. Laura Downs at the piano there with Billie Holiday's I Wished on the Moon. Our two guests this morning on Friday Morning with the Arts, starring in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, opening next week at the Kranzberg Arts Center, Alexis J. Roston playing Lady Day, and Abdul Hamid Royal providing music for the show. Highly urge you to see this. You can go to KranzbergArtsCenter.org for tickets and or get them through all the regular outlets. Let's talk about Lady Day for a minute, Billie Holiday. She is, I'm always amazed that she has persisted so well. Take her performance, her talent out of the picture. She lived a very troubled life, and yet we're still fascinated with this story, all the warts included.
Well, of course. I mean, troubled but triumphant, and mm-hmm. I think that's why we keep talking about it. The victimization is like the very first layer, you know, the Billie as a troubled individual. She was also a woman of her time. She was a woman who lived her way. She lived according to her rules. She negotiated an all-male or a male-dominated industry. She lived inside and outside of traditions, inside and outside of customs. She was in a very real way, she was a triumphant character, and I think that's the reason that we keep talking about her, is because somehow in the music that we are touched by, her humanity touches that same humanity in all of us. It's not just that she had a substance abuse issues, or that she was an abused woman, or any of the other things that are just, again, the veneer. Right underneath that, you find a person who found a way from the very beginning to keep going, to keep doing, to reimagine and renegotiate herself. And that's what makes Billie Holiday, I think, iconic in the true sense. I mean, that's one of the reasons that we keep talking about her. It's not just that, well, a lot of people sing fantastic music, and she happened to be, in my estimation, a genius because of what she brought to the art form. But she was also triumphant. And I think, as human beings, I think we're drawn to those triumphant characters, and she was certainly one of them.
Well, and she was triumphant at a time, given her circumstances, that she could have been just the opposite. Black woman in her time. I mean, there was every reason to think that she was going to face walls that she could not get over and not be triumphant. And yet she did.
She did.
I mean, it's amazing.
She did. I mean, she's in a long list of women who did that.
Of course.
Of all stripes, of all ethnicities. And I think the fact that she unapologetically flew in the face of what was expected of women at that time, flew in the face of ways in which women were supposed to behave, to speak. Maya Angelou tells a story that when she met Billie, she was shocked by the ways in which Billie cursed, and that she sort of transformed cursing into an art form. And, of course, I mean, you know, she was not a shy, vulnerable, retiring, winsome, sort of in the corner kind of person. And I think all of those things make her interesting to us, because we ask, how did she transcend, like, her time, her gender, her circumstances,
and become the icon that she is?
Yeah.
And we actually, she is triumphant, and she's the victor in the sense that there are so many things that we look at in her career, in her life and times, and say, my goodness, how did you ever overcome that? And that is one of the reasons we're so drawn to her, because she was not she was not beat down by the things that she experienced. And one thing that I like to see is that, you know, we look at it from a certain vantage point, but she just lived her life. She just lived her life, and she just kept going no matter what the circumstance was. And we look at it as such a tumultuous situation, but she was living.
Yeah.
She was enjoying.
One foot in front of the other, day after day.
Yeah.
Absolutely that.
Yeah. Come what may, she was enjoying her life.
Yeah.
And not just her own life. She found a way to, one of the things that is written, you know, sort of in the archives about her, is that the people around her knew that she loved them. So there's a way in which, even though she was experiencing pain, discomfort, challenges, roadblocks, incredible circumstances, rape, and institutionalization, all of those things, the people around her would say of her that she would, that they knew very much that she was a loving person, that she found a way to constantly reach for both the, as she says in the show, the high and the low, both of those things, the yin and the yang, were present with her. And I think that kind of, that's also one of the things that maybe we find curious, is why she didn't just descend into the depths of despair.
And concentrate on herself and not the people around her.
Yeah, but she didn't do it. To a fault in some senses.
Yeah.
I mean, her relationships were colorful and troubling. The men in her life were colorful and troubling. But the other persons in her life would say of her that she was very loving.
Loving, yeah.
Attentive.
Couldn't find a better friend.
Yeah.
You know, she'd give you anything she had. you know, and those are the things that we are, as human beings, are constantly looking for in someone. So when I read about her and I hear these stories about her, I am intrigued all the more, because she had to reach from deep within to pull out that kind of love and give that to people, giving what she had gone through. You know, always ever searching for love in her relationships with men
and women.
Mm-hmm. You know, she speaks highly of her mom. She held her mom in high esteem. But we know the story that it is because of her mom that she was prostitution. You know, there are just so many things that happened, but even yet she took it with a grain of salt. She understood that life brought you the good and the bad, you know, into every life a little rain must fall, and she understood that, and she just kept going.
The other thing she did I'd like to sort of throw in is that she created a narrative for herself that she could live with. Like, we know now as a result of history that a lot of what she said were massaged facts. Names were massaged, places, dates were massaged, events were massaged. But what she created was a narrative that she could live in and live with. And I think there's something about that, too, that that she found a way. I mean, I keep going back to that she, Billy, always found a way to make the life that she had a life worth living, no matter what the circumstances were.
We're talking about Billie Holiday. She is Lady Day, of course. And Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill opens on the 17th of February, runs through March 4th at the Kranzberg Arts Center. It's a Max and Louis production. And our guest this morning, the stars of the show, Alexis J. Rostin and Abdul Hamid Royal. We'll talk more in just a minute. It's Friday Morning with the Arts.
Thank you.
perhaps one of the best-known songs that Lady Day did in her storied career, God Bless the Child. Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. It opens at the Kranzberg Arts Center on the 17th, runs through March 4th, and that was, again, Laura Downs at the piano from her Billie Holiday songbook CD of a couple of years ago. Our two guests this morning, Alexis J. Rostin, who plays Lady Day, and Abdul Hamid Royal, who plays Jimmy Powers in the play, who Billy Powers, and you're going to have to describe how, for our, many of our listeners, I'm sure, are aware of the production itself.
Right.
But explain your character, because you're not just one person. You're sort of, I think you use the word amalgam.
I probably did. Jimmy Powers in the show is literally all of the persons who ever played for Billy, sort of folded into one character. And this guy happens to be the guy who, at the penultimate, perhaps the final performance of Billie Holiday, is her longtime accompanist. And you'll have to come to the show and find out how long Jimmy's been with Billie. But an interesting guy, because Jimmy is a classic codependent in the sense that he loves her, as many people did. He took care of her. He used her. He watched out for her. He was there in a number of different roles, not just as her musical director in the world of the play, Emerson's Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. So kind of an interesting character.
And the whole time, do you actually, are you at the keyboard, at the piano the whole time? Or
I'm at the piano the whole time, and I have lines. Jimmy Powers and Billy interact throughout the show.
Right. Yeah. And you're joined by, I believe, a percussionist and a bass player, or is it?
Yes.
Now, do they play a role in the play as well?
They are, you know, the musicians, Caleb Kirby and Ben Wheeler? Oh, man. Ben, I'm so sorry. He's a fantastic player here in town.
Ben. Yeah. So the other two accompaniments, the other two musicians, do they have speaking roles in the
no.
show as well? Not like Jimmy does.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, only Jimmy Powers.
So it's basically a two-man show. Again, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with it, or
yes,
who haven't seen it. I have to ask you, Alexis, how do you feel about being up in the up in that stratosphere with Audra McDonald? I mean,
well,
you know, she is thought of as the person who brought this show along first, or made it the big show that it became. And you're like, you are walking among the stars, girl, and singing among them too.
Okay.
Well, you'll take that, huh?
This is what I'll say as far as my experience with Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. Somewhere around 2000, maybe 1999, was my first introduction to this show. Like I said, I went to Howard University for musical theater, and everyone had to do a senior project. And there was a young lady named Monique Caldwell who decided that Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill would be her senior project. So I sat in her audience and I watched my classmate bring to life this iconic jazz great, and I was just enamored. It was so fantastic. It was one of the most awesome things I'd ever experienced. And that was my introduction to this show. That was in 1999. So fast forward to 2013, and I had the opportunity to play it. I hadn't heard anything else about this show in all that time, literally. Not that it wasn't being done anywhere. I just hadn't heard anything about it. It kind of just went away. And
That was your mile marker, huh?
Right. Ooh. 2013, I'm bringing this character to life at Porchlight Music Theater in Chicago. And it was sold out just about the entire run of the show. And like you said, I won a Joseph Jefferson Award for it, for best solo performance.
Did I say that?
You did.
Okay.
And just so happens, the very next year is when Miss Audra McDonald does it on Broadway. So I'd like to say I came before her, regardless of her Tonys and all of that. She's fantastic. She's amazing. She's great. But there was no speak of Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill prior to me doing it in 2013. I hadn't heard any. There was no Audra McDonald, we doing it on Broadway buzz. None of that. It literally just, it surprised me that it was awakened in such a way shortly thereafter. But then there's this. I'm from Chicago, and a lot of times, a lot of the stuff that happens on Broadway is shopped in Chicago first. Mm-hmm. One, because Chicago is such a theater town, and people always say, well, if you can make it in Chicago, oh, we know we got a winner. You know what I mean? So, hey, who knows? Maybe somebody was like, oh, this little girl in Chicago did the show, and you know what? I think we should do it on Broadway. Who can do it? Audra, of course. Duh. You know, I like to have that as my backstory.
I would say, let's make that your front story now, okay? I'm going with it.
I'm calling her. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing
it
right now.
Every day. Yeah. Oh, you don't want to do it? Okay, let's see if we can get Audra on the phone.
Oh, yeah, I'll just call her. Interestingly enough, though, we were talking about the musicians, and they are St. Louis natives, and they are fantastic. Caleb Kirby and Ben Wheeler. I had a senior moment. I knew it was Ben Wheeler.
Yeah, senior moment.
A senior moment. Easy now.
Oh,
easy
yes,
now.
Sir.
It's too early.
Got it.
But they are fantastic musicians and have already, even in rehearsals, added flair and flavor to what the folks are going to see at the Kranzberg. So I'm really honored and excited to be working with both of those guys.
Well, and the Kranzberg is such a great place to put this on, too. It's really a nice venue.
Great.
So, oh, you haven't been there yet?
No, we've not seen it.
Well, okay, I'm not going to say another word.
We wait with bated breath.
That's okay.
Our guests this morning, Alexis J. Rostin and Abdul Hamid Royal. They are in the new Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, and we'll talk more with them. It's Friday morning with the Arts.
Thank you.
The Radio Arts Foundation of St. Louis, Friday morning with the arts, and Them Their Eyes from the Billie Holiday songbook. And that is one of several songs that is in the new production of Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, which opens on the 17th at the Kranzberg Arts Center, a Max and Louie production. It runs through March 4th. Our guest this morning on Friday Morning with the Arts, Alexis J. Roston, who plays Lady Day, and Abdul Hamid Royal, who is Jimmy Powers, an amalgam of characters. And we'll talk in just a minute with Abdul Hamid.
At the University of Missouri, St. Louis, music isn't just a major, it's a passion. Their bachelor's and master-level programs professionally and academically prepare future educators, performers, composers, and scholars, because they know your calling can also be your career. An accredited member of the National Association of Schools of Music, UMSL is committed to combining outstanding performance opportunities with instruction from world-renowned artists. At UMSL, you'll study with dedicated, accomplished faculty members, musicians who perform and present nationally and internationally, each committed to their students and their craft. And at the Blanche M. Toohill Performing Arts Center, a breathtaking, state-of-the-art facility that's among the best in the United States, UMSL students don't just study, they take center stage. World-class facilities, personalized instruction, professional artists. The University of Missouri, St. Louis. Don't just learn music, live it. Choose music at the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Financial support from listeners like you helps the Radio Arts Foundation continue to grow and enrich the cultural landscape of St. Louis. Thank you for taking part in our mission.
Yes, thank you as always. 9:42 now, Friday Morning with the Arts. Our guests this morning, Alexis J. Roston and Abdul Hamid Royal. They are appearing in Lady Day and at Emerson's Bar and Grill, opening on the 17th at the Kranzberg. And Abdul Hamid, you told us a little bit about your history as a musician. I mean, you started at an early age. I think you said four.
You were going to say way back, weren't you? You go way back.
Busted.
Back. Yes.
Busted.
It's all right.
So, what, okay. You hinted that, you know, your parents sort of played with the idea of, you know, being a international
law, international relations. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
But I think that's out of the picture now. I mean, this is a, you mentioned you just pulled in from Louisville. You performed in Louisville last weekend. So, if I had a four-year-old in here, or let's make it a little more realistic. Let's say we had a 12-year-old in
here
who showed some promise, maybe in high school music or whatever. What would you tell him to follow? Wow. How would you go about? What kind of advice would you give?
Wow. So the first thing I'd say is that the time of preparation is never wasted. So learn as much as you can about as much as you can relative to the business. Because this is not just about talent, right? This is an actual business. And so you want to sort of be aware of not just the technical pieces or the artistic pieces, but the business element as well. That's going to be very important. Listen to all kinds of music. Listen to as much as you possibly can. And then, of course, perfect your craft. I mean, you know, I'm still practicing. You know, decades later, I was just laughing with Caleb Kirby yesterday. We were in rehearsal, and I said, "Wow, man, I've been playing a lot, but I haven't practiced very much." And so, I would say to that young woman or that young man, that young boy, that young girl, perfect your craft. Listen, ask questions, and don't be afraid of being afraid. Because this is a business that doesn't have a linear trajectory for many people.
Mm-hmm.
When I left Chicago after grad school, I was really, really blessed because I went to New York. I had a job when I got there, and I never stopped working. It isn't that way for everybody. And you may have to do some other things, but also have a goal, have a plan. Don't wait for things to come to you. I don't know.
I like don't be afraid to be afraid.
Don't be afraid to be afraid, right. But and also, don't let someone else's reality be yours. I mean, you really, literally, when you get into the business, sure, it's a gamble, but I made a decision, and this is one of the things that did turn around for me, is that if I could do something else and be happy, then I should. That's the other thing I'd say.
I would concur.
Yeah, if there's something else that you can do, and you'd be just as happy selling newspapers or in early childhood development, then you should absolutely do that, because this industry demands so much of you that if you aren't focused on who you are and why you are doing what you are doing, you will be easily consumed.
Truth. So. Yeah, for me, it's a similar situation. When I made a conscious decision as a youth that this is what I wanted to do, I did everything to pursue it. And then going through school, my mentor, the late, great Mike Malone, believed in me. I think he probably believed in me more than I believed in myself. But at any rate, when it came time for us to graduate, I had already been booked, like, for at least the next year and a half. Graduation was Saturday. Tuesday, I'd started working at the Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C., and it just went on from there. And I had an agent who was in both L.A. and New York. I had plans to move to New York. Life, you know, happened, and I didn't make it just because I made some conscious decisions. I actually had given up theater for a good 3 to 4 years just for my own mental health and spiritual reasons. But when it's for you, it is for you. So when it was time to pick it up again, I picked it up. It was like 2004. I was living in Baltimore, and I moved back home to Chicago in 2004. And literally 2 weeks after I'd been home, my same mentor, who I had from college.
Was that Mike Malone?
Mike Malone, the late great. And he was in Chicago doing a show called Black Nativity with Congo Square Theater Company. Now, this is how life works. Congo Square Theater Company was founded by a gentleman that went to Howard University, who was 3 years my senior, and another gentleman that also worked hand in hand with Mike Malone. They both founded this company in Chicago, Illinois, where I am from. And my
and
first,
just a bit proud, I see.
Yeah. Shout out. And then Mike Malone gave me my first professional show, which was Black Nativity at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. Now, that was in about 1999. You want to fast forward to 2004, and I'm coming home, and I don't even know what I'm about to do. But 2 weeks into my stay at home, I am now working with my mentor, the late, great Mike Malone.
I was waiting for Abdul Hamid to add that little touch.
I was gonna, but you know, she's on a roll. So,
with Congo Square Theater Company, and I have since worked throughout the years. I've worked nonstop. That's 2004. This is now 2017. So I'm very, very grateful, and I am also an ensemble member now with Congo Square Theater Company.
Wow!
Full circle.
Our guests this morning open up next week, the 17th, at the Kranzberg Arts Center in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. We have time to hear one more piece that you perform in the production. We played earlier this morning a piece that I mentioned was probably one of the best known, or I'll say most popular,
yes,
pieces, because it's been done by so many people. God bless the child.
That Billy wrote, by the way.
Yep.
Yes.
And this next piece is one of her best-known pieces if you are a Billie Holiday buff or fan or a musicologist, because it resonates so much. Tell us about Strange Fruit.
So at the point in the show that you hear Strange Fruit, Billie is sharing with you an encounter she had while being on the road with Artie Shaw, being on the road with all white musicians being the only colored in the group, in the act. And the story is twofold. It is both disheartening, but it is also comical, which speaks to the soul of the artist for me. She found joy just in being able to sing and perform all in of itself. So the things that came along with it, whether it be good or bad, she took it with a grain of salt because she was doing what she loved to do. Now, when Strange Fruit came into her life, we have to acknowledge the period. We have to acknowledge her being a woman in that time and all the mental anguish it probably would have had on the regular or normal person. But I look at her as being just kind of supernatural in a way. And having the solace of her music to carry her through all the circumstances.
Yeah, Strange Fruit is social commentary.
Sure is.
It's social critique. Mm-hmm. It's historical critique. It's an expression of a person's pain, of a people's pain, and also the use. You know, Alexis talked about her being a colored woman. I mean, this is the language of the time. This is the language that they were using: ofes, grays, coloreds, and her response to the use of that language. And her experience of the use of that language, those terms and many other colorful terms that I'm sure some of us are familiar with.
Right, and I'll just share this one other thing that what you don't necessarily hear in the show is the effect that the song had on her once she'd sung it. There was an account I read that anytime she ever sung Strange Fruit, she would immediately be overwhelmed with like physical sickness. She envisioned her father being strung up in those trees, being that strange fruit. And so she, once that song was over, she could no longer stand. She would be that physically ill that she would have to leave the stage. And it got to a point in her career that because this was something that people always wanted her to sing, she would stage it in such a way.
It had to be programmed.
It had to be programmed.
At the end.
And she wanted to make sure that the room was dark and her face was lit so you could see what it was and hear, be clear about these words that were coming out of her mouth. So that is one tidbit of information. If you come to see the show, we don't necessarily say that, but that is the history of the piece.
Song is full of emotion, without a doubt, and controversial, like you say, still to this day in many ways. Lady Day and at Emerson's Bar and Grill, and we'll hear one last piece, and that's the piece we've just been talking about, Strange Fruit. It's Friday Morning with the Arts. from the Billie Holiday songbook, Lara Downs at the piano. And one of the songs that you'll hear in the show opening next week at the Kranzberg, Strange Fruit, one of the, again, one of those songs that made Billie Holiday the icon that she is today. And we look forward to the show. It's Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, Max and Louie production, Kranzberg Arts Center. Opens on the 17th, runs till March 4th. Tickets available several ways. You can go to maxandlouie.com. MetroTix, of course, has them. Or you can walk right up to the fabulous Fox Theater box office and purchase them in person. Well, guys, I want to thank you for coming. It was a pleasure to meet both of you.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And, well, break a leg and all that good stuff.
We'll see you there.
We will see you there. I highly urge you to see these two. They're as lovely on stage as they are in person right here in our studios at the Radio Arts Foundation. Alexis J. Roston,
yes,
who plays Lady Day, Billie Holiday, Abdul Hamid Royal, who plays Jimmy Powers and performs at the piano in the show. Again, it runs February 17th through March 4th. I'm Jim Doyle. Thanks again for coming in, guys. Don't be strangers. Come back again, okay?
Love to.
Okay.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Make it a great day, my friend, and a good weekend. Minute shy of 10 o'clock, Kathy Lawton Brown comes your way after the top of the hour, and we'll talk real soon.